time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Good morning, we're Rahel.
And Sonia.
And this is Israel, Israel, the free voice for Israel. Boker tov lekol ha'mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. You can hear us also on the internet at WSMNradio.com. And it's a beautiful morning here in Nashua, a little bit cold. And I think we're going to get right into it. What do you say, Sonia?
Yes, our Hebrew word today is Giyur and Ger Tzedek.
Giyur and Ger Tzedek,
yes,
okay.
Yes. Giyur means conversion. Conversion from another religion to Judaism. And historically, this process starts only in around between 76 to 76 before our era, more or less, under Alexander Yanai, which was a king of Judea, and actually in English his name it will be Alexander Yaneus.
Yeah, something like that. You know, I didn't really know who he was.
Yes, he is one of the Maccabean descendants.
Ah, from the Maccabees.
Yes. And in order for him to establish calmness with his new habitants, because he was a great warrior
and great conqueror.
He conquered a lot of locations. So he find a patent, a trick, if you want, and he asked the new habitants to convert to Judaism or to leave.
Really?
Yes. And actually, the people decided that they will convert.
It's a good religion.
To the Judaism. And this is the first time that Judaism find this trick. Ger Tzedek, however, it's a righteous convert, somebody which from very spiritual ideologies, he is becoming a Jew.
From the heart. In other words, not asked to convert, but does it on their own.
So
we are mentioning this word, the two words, actually, Giyur and Ger Tzedek, because our guest today is Hadassah, who is a longtime friend of Sonia's. She's a Hebrew college graduate in Jewish studies and also has an MA in counseling psychology. She also volunteers as a dog rescuer with a dog rescue group, but she also has a lifelong love for the Hebrew language. She's a native New Englander and a Ger Tzedek, a Jew by choice, a convert to Judaism because she loves it. So this is a pre-recorded interview, and we're going to hear Hadassah.
Boker tov. Hadassah, ma shlomech?
Beseder. Ma shlomech?
We are here in the radio station, and it's our great pleasure to have you over. So, we will start with a few questions. We know each other for almost 10 years. Your personal history is incredible for me. And maybe you'll tell it in a best-selling book one day, and I'm wishing for. So please tell us
where you were born, where you have been born.
Starting from the very beginning.
Very beginning. Unfortunately, I don't remember because I was very young then. And what I do remember is what I was told, that I was born on the 28th of October, which is day after yours, yeah,
yes,
pretty much.
Exactly.
So we have that connection as well. In the 50s, I'm not going to say 1950 what, in Connecticut, Central Connecticut, where I was an only child of Polish Catholic parents.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Catholic school and pretty early on decided, and this is, I guess, something that's interested you for years, that Jesus probably didn't speak Latin, although now, knowing more history, I'm sure he did speak Latin and Greek and probably some Sanskrit as well, but that his main language would probably have been Hebrew. So as a youngster, very young, I decided that I wanted to go to Hebrew school. I wanted to learn Hebrew. My father, who was a little unusual for the community, he was more of an intellectual. He had degrees. He had his own business. And he thought it was a fine idea. So,
Hi, Hadassah.
Rahel. Hi, Rahel.
Where was this?
This was in Central Connecticut.
Okay.
Yeah, the poverty pocket, actually, we call it. It's not the place where Meryl Streep lives or, you know. It's,
Paul Newman.
Those other places in Connecticut. So my poor father went running around the town looking for a rabbi who would take me into the Hebrew school program. Yeah. Because most of his friends were Jewish. It was a very paranoid time in the 50s. I don't know if you remember, but there was the Cold War,
yes,
operative at that time. There was a lot of McCarthyism. There was also an awful lot of public anti-Semitism. There was a Father Coughlin in the Boston area who was rabidly anti-Semitic in the public forum of the Boston Garden. Meanwhile, my poor dad went around saying, my daughter wants to go to Hebrew school, and was rejected because nobody could figure out why I would want to do this. Yeah, it's just always been a thread. There was also at that time the McCarthy Commission. There was an anti-communist bent. Very paranoid time. People had fallout shelters in their backyards. They built houses with the windows high up in the corners. And there was a lot of us versus them-ism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you wanted to learn Hebrew.
I wanted to learn Hebrew.
Okay. So tell us a little bit more about your parents' home and what happened next.
What happened next?
No, I would, because I know Hadassah a little bit, mm-hmm, I would ask you what happened in Poland with your parents.
Well, they weren't my parents. The best-selling book part is really interesting because I did have an aunt who was killed by the Soviet regime for writing a book. That was in the 1960s. Mm. That was after the World War II, which I don't remember. I was not alive, but I did locate relatives who rescued some little Jewish girls,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and kept them with them. Their names were Andrzej and Anna.
Mm-hmm.
They had a one-room farmhouse, and they rescued these two little girls, kept them for the duration of the war. One of them went out, I don't know, for a cup of coffee, for a pack of cigarettes. Who knows? She was 9 and never came back. It was traumatic for everyone. And the other one who survived was so annoyed with my relatives that she did not mention that they had rescued her until sometime in the 1980s. So that their name doesn't appear on Yad Vashem, mm-hmm, in Israel. It does, however, appear at the Holocaust Museum in the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C.,
wow,
which is where I saw it. Had a friend in Israel at that time who was able to do the legwork, mm-hmm, and look it up for me. I have a testimonial somewhere. to the effect that she was so aggravated by these people. The
Keep
point
her
was
inside.
That they wanted to adopt her at the end of the war.
And she didn't want.
And when the Chalutzim at that time came through to find the orphan children and bring them to Israel, the family wanted her to stay with them. Mm-hmm. And it created a rift that apparently was never resolved. And these are the kinds of rifts between people that are tragic. And perhaps one of the lessons we can learn is that we don't have to be always us versus them. We can reach out a hand in love and friendship and not cut it off the minute it becomes inconvenient.
Right.
It's unfortunate.
Wow. Okay, continue. So I'm sorry that they cut
I'm
you off.
Maybe I'm not following completely, but your parents were born in Poland?
My father was, yeah.
Okay. And so he immigrated to America and met your mother.
A couple times, yeah. They went back and forth.
Oh, okay. But you were born here. Okay.
I was, yeah.
So the story continues here in America. And there you are, a young Catholic girl wanting to learn Hebrew, not being able to find a place to do it. How did that then progress? What happened? How did you get there?
What happened was, of course, years went by, and I still had this desire to learn Hebrew. My father was politically active in the town. He was on the school committee. He was the campaign manager for his friend, who was running for selectman. His friend, the Jew, was a very close friend, and my father was doing a pretty good job as the campaign manager. Not to cast aspersions or to disparage any individual, but this was the emotional climate of the times. It was such that the Catholic priest, the head priest of the town, came to our door one evening, and he knocked on the door, came into the living room, and told my father, in no uncertain terms, that he would be excommunicated if he did not cease and desist supporting his friend.
Now, which year was this?
You know what? I do not remember.
Was this the 60s?
It was in the 60s. No, it was in the 60s. Yeah. I don't know. I suppose one could go through archives and retrieve some of that information, but it was...
Yeah, no, it's not... I know that my parents had, as Jews, had a lot of trouble finding work, and they ended up where they ended up because that's the only place that would give them work as Jews. So it would have been around the 50s, 60s, in the 60s. So
I
was just curious.
It was a very paranoid time. You know, Vietnam was just beginning to escalate.
Right.
The Bay of Pigs had put us all on notice that we are, in fact, finite and mortal, you know, and that things can turn in an instant. And there's... the priest with his big black Cadillac and his big black cigar and his black clothes. And my father, having kind of a tendency to violence, threw him out the door. Yeah. Threw him out of the door, and he kind of rolled down the stairs and waddled away. It was unfortunate.
Was that the end of your Catholic
That was pretty
education?
Much it. Yeah, that was pretty much it. And not a happy time. There were unfortunate consequences to those behaviors as well. It didn't resonate so cleanly for my dad. The aftershocks of that were difficult. But at that time, it was one of the true heart-to-heart talks that we had been able to have. And he told me that he had done that. This is right. You support your friend.
Mm-hmm.
You support the people you love. And you don't let anything get between you and your support for your loved ones.
Period.
Done. That's it. Yeah. So from that point on, I think the dice were rolled and the future just kind of had to unfold in a way
for you.
That, yeah.
So before this incident, your upbringing, you remained, did you go to public school or Catholic school?
Both.
Both, okay. So, and your... if I might be able to ask, and you don't have to answer if you feel that it's an inappropriate question, but can you tell a little bit about what you felt about the Catholic education that you were getting?
Academically, it was superior to the public education.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is going to show up further down the page a little bit, but the idea of being told what I could and could not read was always kind of a thorn in the side. It wasn't, it never did actually sit well with me. And there were also issues about dissent not being an option, which with my Jewish friends, what there was give and take. There was texture, there was vibrancy, there were discussions
debates
of
and
questions and debates and arguments. And I think that was my dad's pull as well. All of his friends were Jewish or Armenian, you know, different culture, different dynamic. And it was irresistible to me that not only would people respect what I had to say, you know, they would feed me and, in fact, give me jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I got wonderful babysitting jobs. I was able to be the Sabbath goy on a number of different occasions, and we can
for
talk about that a little
just
bit.
The Sabbath goy is that Jews are, you know, very highly observant. Jews don't do certain things on the Shabbat, and but they don't mind if a non-Jew will do it for them. So you're talking about being the one who was doing all of these things.
In those days, I lit a lot of cigarettes.
So let's move on a little bit to you are now maybe moved out of the house. You're an adult. You're coming into your own. I see a question here, and I'm not quite sure what it's about, but it says, what is the most important lesson you learned from World War II? And I don't know if that's relevant right now.
I think I did that.
No, we did it.
Oh,
we did
okay.
It, yes.
All right. So then I'm just wondering, well, I guess we didn't find out how you learned Hebrew in the end.
In the end, how I learned
Hebrew. How you finally got there.
Yeah.
Because obviously you had very supportive parents.
Well, in certain ways. Everyone's multidimensional. Nothing is that simple.
But in regards to being friendly towards Judaism and Jews and having Jewish friends.
This was
and
my dad.
Hebrew.
This was my dad. It was a split family.
Yeah.
My mother was of a different dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to just go forward here and not do that because there's no...
It's not
Judaism can hold its own. It doesn't need to be better than this or in comparison to that.
Right, absolutely.
It has its own validity. It has its own light. It has its own breath. And I don't think you need to, and I've always said, you know, make my point by denigrating others and their choices.
Sure.
So how did you come to making this choice? Let's jump there a little bit.
Well, it was pretty interesting.
It's probably a big jump, but...
After I flunked waitressing in several northern Maine locations, I had to come to Boston to get a real job. Yeah, and I ended up in Brookline. Of course I did. And all of a sudden, I was home.
And for our listeners who may not be familiar with Brookline, Brookline is a very heavily Jewishly populated. So.
Much more in the 70s than
now. Than
now. Yeah.
Right. So at that time, would have been considered more of a Jewish neighborhood. And so that's where you landed.
That's where I landed, and I was... At home. It was my home. And people would stop me on the street, little old ladies, when I was driving my car, and they would say, can you help me, dear, with these groceries? And they would get into my car, and I had never had an experience like this of community.
Mm-hmm.
And just, of course you're here, you'll help me. And being able to help the people and trying to make, God help me, chicken soup for the elderly women in the building, and they would complain, and they would kvetch, and they would eat it. But it was never really good. It was just, this is what it would have been to live in a family. This is what it would have been to have a community.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the communities of my earlier life were very fractured and fragmented. Much of the suburbs in those days were being built up out of farmland, and there really wasn't a community spirit. In my early 20s in Brookline, I really found myself. I had at that time a very good job, at which everyone was Jewish. And they would say to me, you're Polish, you must be Jewish.
Right.
Right. Of course.
Well,
what
no.
else would you be there?
Well, we were doing research for the government under contract. Got to be a pretty important person. People read what I wrote. They appreciated my thoughts, my ideas. I made a decent living. And the thread was always, of course you're Jewish. Mm-hmm. You're Polish. You must be Jewish.
Well, you must have been
because I fit in some kind right. of a way, energetically or whatever. Right. And I, okay, it made sense to me, and I was fine with it. Now, at some point I got married mm-hmm. in the 70s as well.
To a Jew?
No, to an Italian, okay. which apparently is pretty close. Actually,
yeah, apparently.
There are some cultural things that are in common. Stayed around the Boston area. When Roots came on television in 1978, I thought I had to go to Poland. And I did. Nobody met me at the airport, of course. But the secret police followed me because I had had this relative who had written this book. The upshot of that trip was that I found myself standing all alone in the gas chambers at Auschwitz.
Wow.
Where you can hear the cries. Mm-hmm. It says in the Torah, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. And that is so absolutely true. The energetics of the area. I heard the cries. And once again, my life changed in that direction.
You went to find your personal roots, and suddenly you changed the path.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Or perhaps that those were the roots.
There is some idea that... Some idea.
So here you are at Auschwitz, hearing the call... And what happens?
Well, Bezrat Hashem, I got home safely with relatively little tumult, except that they wanted to charge me a great deal of duty for some things that I had bought as souvenirs. But the next thing I knew, I was working for a Jewish newspaper.
Which one?
It was in Brookline Village. At that time, it was called the Boston Jewish Times. Mm-hmm. It's been gone now for several years. But it was another place of feeling at home. Mm-hmm. And so you have this dimension of inside, outside, where you're comfortable, where you feel oppressed or curtailed or in some sense not fully alive in the way that you do when you are, perhaps where you belong. So I worked for a couple of years at this Jewish newspaper, and then they went through their time of downsizing, and I refused to be downsized, so I quit.
I just want to say to our listeners that we're speaking with Hadassah, who is a Jew by choice, and we're hearing Hadassah's story. So go ahead, continue.
In 1980... They put up a cross at Auschwitz.
Yes, mm-hmm. You're right.
I was very naive about this. I didn't understand, nor do I yet, the antipathy that arose in the group of people with whom I worked. Because by this time I've internalized Auschwitz. This is my place. Mm-hmm. This is my story. And they would say the 6 million Jews that were killed at Auschwitz. And I would say, yeah. But 6 million Polacks were killed as well. The Jehovah's Witnesses, mm-hmm. the Gypsies. Very simple drawing of...
Special children and...
Yeah, the deaf, mm-hmm. the...
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And they would say, okay, but we don't care about them. And okay, this wasn't the most sensitive group. The 80s were not the best of times. This was about the time when that guy was making the movie that said, greed is good. So... The planet was shifting its focus a little bit. But I held that vision of a place of prayer, a universal place of prayer and healing, mm-hmm. and the potentiality for that, and was so thrilled that somebody was doing it. That there was some, because when you're there, when you stand walking those railroad tracks, standing in the barracks, the only potential for healing is energetic. It's got to be some kind of prayer group, somebody mm-hmm. putting their healing music, if you will, onto the space and giving it time to cultivate. So that was the 80s. Mm-hmm. A lot of personal stuff happened, some of which was difficult. And in the 90s, I found my way to Hebrew College.
Out of what, from what motivation?
Well, I started off with the library, because anybody could get a library card for $25 a year. That was the original mm-hmm. motivation. And before that, you know, in the 70s, when I had lived in Brookline and worked around the Boston University area, I used to bicycle past Hebrew College every day uh-huh. on my way to work and on my way home. And I said, someday I'm going to live here. Now, these are the $3 million houses that I probably will never be able to afford.
Right, right.
But in another sense, I was quite mm-hmm. correct mm-hmm. because it was another very, very much coming home experience.
Wouldn't it be awesome if over 100,000 people, no, wait a second, let's say millions, knew about your business, product, or service? Wouldn't it be even more amazing if you or your business were helping to stop the hatred and the terrorism by supporting the good news about Israel? You can do this by sponsoring a Hebrew Word, the Torah portion, or even a weekly Israel is Real show. So take out your checkbook now to make a donation, advertise, sponsor a show, or even have us read a greeting on a special occasion, maybe happy birthday. By supporting Israel is Real, you make a world of difference. Yes, by loving Israel, you will make the world a better place. So take out your checkbooks and write a check now to Absolute Broadcasting. Send it to our personal mailbox at Israel is Real, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. Again, write the check to Absolute Broadcasting. Send it to our personal mailbox at Israel is Real, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. You can also find us on the web at www.israelisrealnh.com. That's one whole word. IsraelIsRealNH.com.
Did you know that The Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? To receive Vision's email alerts and be informed about the Vision's educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision's website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nh4israel.org.
Dr. James Haas of Vanguard Dental Group in Derry, New Hampshire, is a board-certified pediatric dentist who is extremely talented at putting anxious children at ease so they have a positive dental experience. Dr. Jim Haas specializes in treating children with special, emotional, or physical needs by way of sedation and operating room dentistry. Dr. Jim Haas is currently accepting new patients. Your child will enjoy dental visits with Dr. Jim Haas. Call 603-434-1586 or visit www.vanguarddentalgroup.com to learn more about Dr. Jim Haas. 603-434-1586 or visit www.vanguarddentalgroup.com. And we are listening to the music of Bruce Berger, also known as Rebbe Soul. You can find him at www.RebbeSoul.com, RebbeSoul.com. The music is from his new CD called From Another World. We are returning now to our pre-recorded interview with Hadassah, a longtime friend of Sonia's, Hebrew College graduate, and volunteer for a dog rescue group, is lifelong lover of the Hebrew language, native New Englander, and most importantly, a Jew by choice, a convert to Jerusalem. Ger Tzedek. Hadassah.
We're speaking with Hadassah, who is a Jew by choice, and we're hearing Hadassah's story. So, here you are working in Hebrew College.
No, I did not work in Hebrew College.
Sorry.
I started with the library card, mm-hmm. and I got sucked in. I got reeled in like a fish, mm-hmm. by the love and the kindness and the people and the opportunity to take Ulpan.
Okay, and Ulpan is language learning to learn Hebrew.
Yeah, right. It is. And I took a lot of Ulpan for an awfully long time. And it was just a wonderful way to live.
You completed your dream.
I completed my dream of learning Hebrew.
Okay, so you've come now, and you've got Hebrew under your belt.
I do.
And I'm going to sort of push you a little bit along here because I'm not sure what our timing is like. But so you've got Hebrew now. You've felt the calling from at Auschwitz. And now what brings you to finally go ahead and become a Jew?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Okay. And this is Hadassah, Jew by choice.
Mm-hmm. I had some... we had a pretty bad personal experience that left us crushed and broken. On the first level of recovery, Hebrew College threw its arms around me and embraced me. Gave me the space in which to heal. So when I finally had the strength to cry out to God for a job, I needed a job. And I would have taken anything just because I needed the self-respect. And a couple days later, my friend came up to me, absolute true story, and said, "How would you like to teach Hebrew?" And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. And I said, "That's great, I'd love to do that. What is the population?" And she said, "Children." And I thought, oh, children.
Jewish children?
Any children. It was a little different. It wasn't my idea. I hadn't envisioned. I had a more collegial kind of idea. But that's okay. It was fine. And I taught Hebrew in that little congregation for several years. And here and there around the Boston area, until we finally moved into New Hampshire, mm-hmm. in 2002. Shortly after the 9/11 incident, mm-hmm. when I decided that I did not feel safe living in an urban area, mm-hmm. anymore. And my husband was compassionate enough to agree with me. And so here we are in New Hampshire. and that's that story.
And then when did it happen that you actually...
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. At some point, it occurred to me that I was saying all of these things, but I didn't have the documentation to back mm-hmm. it up. I was saying, we...
Not just saying, it seems you were living all of those things. You were actually
I was living a Jewish mm-hmm. life. A lot of people have this dilemma at some point in their life. Many of them resolve it by finishing their PhD and becoming a professor, a scholar. Mm-hmm. That was what I thought I would do. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to do a couple years at Brandeis by invitation in their ancient Near East program. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have the chutzpah I was already a little bit older. I didn't want to take loans. I didn't want to establish, you know, debt that I would not necessarily be able to live with afterwards. And so I let it go. And I'm pretty glad I did because I would be in Iraq today. And that would be a little different. So I was teaching, and I felt, at that time that I needed a piece of paper because I didn't feel that I was being fraudulent in my presentation, but I thought it could come up to question. So I called the rabbi for whom I was teaching at the time and had been and said, listen, I think I really need to have a piece of paper here and do this. And he said, well, fine, what are you doing on next Friday? I already had a master's degree in Jewish studies. I had been confronted with the course. Apparently there's a course that you're supposed to take. And I was able to opt out of that because at that time I still knew people at Hebrew College, which was down the street from the UAHC at that time, which is now the URJ.
Well, and it seems like you already having a master's and all of that, and you know, in your whole Jewish history already.
Yeah, pretty much got to.
Sounds like you probably could pass that course in a minute.
You think? Yeah. So, yeah. That was the point that was made on my behalf, so I didn't have to take the course. Right. And so somewhere in the archives, there's a piece of paper from 1993, I believe, making me an official Jew.
Mazel tov! Mazel tov! Sivan tovu, mazel tov! So I'm going to move you along a little bit and ask you a few, maybe... a couple of questions about. I know that Sonia has sort of told me in brief about your experience in Israel, and if you wouldn't mind sharing that a little bit.
I'm not much of a tourist, and I took. It was during the Intifada. I honestly can't remember the year. I think it was 88 that I went with
first
a group.
Intifada.
Yeah. That I went with a group. And they saw the sights and went to the restaurants and all the touristy things. And I went to the Kotel. I went to the Western Wall. And I went every day. And I didn't care about anything else because that was where I wanted to be. I didn't need to see restaurants or historical things.
I want to interject.
Okay.
When you told me the story, you told me that you came. I asked you if you saw Israel, and you said yes, I was there. And I said, and what did you see? And where you have been? In Jerusalem. And what did you see? The Kotel, the Western Wall. And I said, for how long have been? 2 weeks. And I looked at you, and I said, I probably don't understand what she is telling me. And I said, and what you saw there, can you tell our listener what you told me?
I can try.
You were standing at the Kotel for 2 weeks.
Not consistently. I took breaks to go back to the hotel and sleep and
grab
a meal every once in a while. But that was my day, yeah.
Right, okay. And why? And what
because everything is there. Because when you're there, you don't have to go anywhere else. You come with your baggage and your bondage and your questions and your complaints, and you stand there and you feel them all disappear. You just stand. And it heals you. There are energy centers, I don't know how to call them in the world. I haven't been as well traveled as others, but Machu Picchu is certainly one in Peru. Notre Dame in Paris is another one. There's just something happening there. But for me, looking through the lens of the Kotel, you can see perhaps not only the world, but the entire universe. And there's just no need to go anywhere else.
And then I thought that I don't know anything with this type of answer from you. I said to myself, it doesn't matter that I'm a Jew, born Jew. I don't understand anything if I didn't understand this then. So I don't understand anything. So
everyone's path is different. Yeah. And I certainly wouldn't wish mine on.
And, you know, again, we're speaking with Hadassah, who is a Jew by choice. And we're speaking about Judaism and, you know, what... The interesting part is that, you know... in an atmosphere where Jews are essentially hated, and you know, and today even, you know, trying to delegitimize Israel as a state and Jews and wipe everybody out, you know, and sort of continue Hitler's path. This is a person, Hadassah, you are a person who embraced Judaism and wanted to become a Jew. So you're standing at the Kotel, you're standing at Auschwitz, and you're feeling energies and you're feeling this calling, and it's giving you something. So what is it that Judaism has given you? Why
a center? A center.
A center.
A center and a skin.
Okay, can you expand on that?
A core and a boundary. Obviously, when you go over my history in such brief, I did a lot of standing. Not a lot of stuff got done, but there was a lot of standing involved. And maybe that's what makes everyone's path unique. You do it because you can't not do it. It is a fearsome thing, and not to be taken lightly, to join a group that much of the world would choose to eliminate. Mm-hmm. Having said that, you do it because you can't do anything else. You do it because there is no, you can dance around it for a period of time, and that increases the level of tension, the ambient tension, but at some point you are confronted with the highest point of reality, which for me is to acknowledge that, yeah, this is my center. I may go off in different directions from this center. I do other things as well, but this is what inspires me and gives me a way to be on this planet that is meaningful and hopefully in which I can contribute, not just be a spectator and a bystander in the life that I've been given.
I told you, and I will tell you again, I felt and I feel, and I will continue to feel the way that I told you that I felt the first time that you told me the story, that it's my deep honor to have you with us, with this big family, the way that you are calling us, you know, Jewish people, it's a big family, with the chicken soup and with the krechzen and with everything. It's a great, great honor. And it's not only me thinking like this. All my friends are thinking the same, and this is a great honor to have you, and this is, we will be forever thankful to have people which they don't care who wants to kill this group of people. I'm going with them. You know, it's exactly the opposite. If somebody wants to kill the group, it's not for me to go with them, you know what I mean? And here you are just cracking off the paradigm, and you are going with the Jews. So it's so touching. For me, it's absolutely touching. It's really.
And I think, Sonia, when you stand at the wall, maybe next time with Hadassah together, you might understand. You're right.
Absolutely. From this time on, every time that I'm going to Jerusalem and I'm like looking to the Kotel, I'm always thinking of you.
You can get it on the webcam.
Yeah, you're right. It's not the same.
It's not the same.
But it's exactly this. Oh, look around. You see the history. This is what you told me. I saw the entire history, and it is, you know, it's beautiful. Beautiful.
It's a very important space.
Okay, I think that unfortunately we need to
wrap it up. How much time do we have?
Maybe 1 minute.
1 minute. In 1 minute, can you maybe sum it up? Judaism for you is? Put you on the spot.
Well, sure, no pressure.
Hadassah, Jew by choice. Judaism for you is? you said it
a space in so which I can live authentically most of the time.
Beautiful.
Thank you so
much. Toda rabba.
Shalom.
Haya Maxim.
Fresha.
It was beautiful. And we're so happy to have you as a guest. And thank you.
Shalom. Shalom. Shalom.
This is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, and we are Israel, Israel, the free voice for Israel. We were hearing today with a beautiful interview with Hadassah, a Jew by choice, a convert to Judaism. Let's hear this week's Torah portion.
Parashat Acharei Mot. Before detailing the list of forbidden relations, the Torah instructs us, do not perform the practices of the land of Egypt in which you dwelled. And do not perform the practices of the land of Canaan to which I bring you. So, why did God deliberately place the Jewish people in the most corrupt places on earth?
That's what we're all wondering.
According to the Jewish commentators, Rav Dessler comments that God deliberately placed the Jewish people in Egypt so that they could develop an intense hatred of its great impurity, which was indeed their motivation for crying out to God to free them from these terrible places, and then rapidly rise from being on this level of impurity and reaching very fast the level of being able to receive the Torah. In today world, there is a constant danger of being affected in a negative way by various harmful influences. Rav Dessler's principle can help us deal with these influences and perhaps even use them for the good. By observing the negative that surrounds a person, he can enhance his appreciation for the beauty of the Torah lifestyle.
Shabbat shalom. I kind of like that Torah portion because we think about, you know, where is Israel placed today? In the middle of very negative hostility. And, you know, hopefully we're going to rise above this and become really what the Torah wants us to be.
And we need to cry for God intervention.
Ve'od ech, as we say. We sure do. So let us remind you, we've got about a minute to tell you and remind you that you can support Israel by supporting Israel is Real and helping us just promote the good news about Israel. You can sponsor a Hebrew word. You can sponsor a Torah portion like you just heard. You can sponsor even a whole show. Or you can just make a donation, or maybe you want to advertise like some of our advertisers do. So again, you can write a check now to Absolute Broadcasting. Send it to our personal mailbox at Israel is Real, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. Find us on the web at www.israelisrealnh.com. Israelisrealnh.com. You've been hearing, yeah.
And in the meantime, we need and must thank you to all our listeners, which they are writing the checks and are sending them to us.
That is for sure. And our sponsors, too. We heard music today by Bruce Berger, also known as Rebbe Soul, www.rebbesoul.com. Our theme song is by myself, Rachel. You can find me at rahelmusic.net, R-A-H-E-L music.net. The CD that we were listening to is From Another World by Rebbe Soul. We're on the air every Friday, 10 to 11 in the morning on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk on the internet at wsmnradio.com. We want to thank wholeheartedly our guest Hadassah for appearing on our show today.
Thank you.
And we say Shabbat shalom from Israel, Israel.